Welcome to Eretz Pod, the official podcast of Yeshivat Eretz HaTzvi. We offer timely reflections on the weekly Torah portion and other timeless Torah insights. Support for Eretz Pod comes from listeners like you. Thank you, and we hope you enjoy this episode.
Today, I have a double agenda in what I'm going to say, what I'm going to explicate. On the one hand, I am going to speak about the text of what is the seventh Aliyah of Parshat Chukat in Bamidbar, and that is in chapter Chaf Aleph 21, and we'll look at Psukim actually from a little bit before the end of Shvi, Psukim Yud Zayin 17 through about 30 or so. And on the other hand, I want to talk about a more general topic that comes out of this that's related to understanding not only this portion that we're talking about, but indeed the entirety of Torah, since Torah is called a Sefer Shira, a book of song, or more correctly translated, a book of poetry. I want to understand the meaning or the significance of poetry in terms of the Torah. So with those two goals in mind, let us point out that immediately before Shri in Pasuk Yud Zayin, Chaf Aleph Yud Zayin 21:17 in Bamidbar, we have specifically a reference that we're talking about poetry. Oz Yashir Yisrael et Hashira Hazot. Yisrael is singing or reciting this Shira, this poem, this song, and it's about a be'er. It's about a spring. It's about water. And of course, you'll look at the context, you'll understand why. But understanding exactly the significance of this poem and the poetry of the poem demands, of course, that we know the text of the Torah and the context of the Torah, and we know, of course, Hebrew and Biblical Hebrew. Quite a challenge, even with the most magnificent translations. A translation, by definition, always falls short, or to once again quote Robert Frost's observation that the only thing missing in the translation of a poem is the poetry. But then, when we go on, in any case, when we go on in the Torah, and we come to Shvi, beginning in Pasuk Chaf Aleph, Pasuk 21, then we have a story that Am Yisrael wants to pass through the land of Sichon. They're denied passage. They specifically say that they were not going to threaten the water supply of continuing that theme. But nonetheless, they go to war and they smite Sichon. Then the Torah tells us that Am Yisrael captured all these cities that belonged to Sichon, and even the main city, the city of Cheshbon, which is the main, let us call it, the capital. And the Torah tells us specifically, it's the capital of where Sichon ruled. Okay? And Sichon captured this himself. And now we come to, therefore, we have another poem, Al Kein Yomru HaMoshlim. Therefore, do the Moshlim say. And obviously, it's a poem that comes out. Who are these Moshlim? And Bo Cheshbon Tipaneh V'Sikonein Yosichon Ki Eish Yatzai. It is a poem, no doubt a poem. But what the significance of the poem and what the indication, and once again, it's a short poem. If you follow the translation, I'm looking at the JPS translation, the old JPS translation. Wherefore they that speak in parables say. Well, who are people who speak in parables? Of course, they are the poets. Sefer Mishlei, the book of parables, or proverbs, as it's also translated, is book of poetry, written by the same great poet, Shlomo Shlomo HaMelech, the son of the great poet, David HaMelech. On the other hand, the article translation, I don't know what it's regarding this, the poets would say, they make it specifically, it's the poets. So these poets are called Moshlim. So we have to look at the word Moshel as poetry, because when you ask people, generally speaking, and I've tried this, when you ask them, how would you translate Moshel? And religious Jews say this word at least a few times in the course of every week. U'moshel bagoyim, ki lashem hamlucha u'moshel bagoyim. Unto God is the kingdom, and he rules over the nations. Yosef says to the brothers in his dream, and they understand the dream is that he's going to be the ruler, and they respond to him, Hamaloch timloch banu? Are you going to be king over others? Hamashol timshol? Will you rule over us? And of course the question is, what is the difference between Melech, the kingdom, and the Moshel? There is a well-known observation of the Vilna Gaon, I believe it's prefigured in the Ibn Ezra, that when we talk about king, as Melech, it is a king that the people have crowned upon themselves, they've accepted him. The Moshel is the person who assumes the usurper of the throne, if you will, the person who rules by the force of having conquered, and it's not the free choice of the people. So this is what the pasuk is saying, that vis-a-vis Am Yisrael, vis-a-vis the people Israel, God is Melech, and vis-a-vis the nations of the world, they are coerced, they will recognize necessarily God as the Moshel. On the other hand, the brothers say, you're not going to rule over us by our assent, nor will we ever give in such that you can conquer us and make us subservient to you. Be it as it may, the word Moshel in its root meaning will take as to rule over something, perhaps by forcing something, but ruling, Moshel, Memshalah, Memshelet Yisrael. We speak of that as a government as well. Of course, There is the expression that the ultimate rule, the ultimate thing that has to be conquered, as we learn in Pirkei Avos at the beginning of the fourth chapter, in which Ben Zoma says, Ezehu Gibor, who is, it's the Mishnah that has Ezehu Ashir, right, who is wealthy, Hasameach Bechelko, the one who is wealthy is the person who is rejoices in what he has. If you're not satisfied with what you have, you're never wealthy. And Ezel Gibor, who is the powerful man? Who is the man of strength? And it's not the person who can conquer cities. It's the person who is Moshel Berucho, Moshel Beitro, a person who can conquer his own inclination to do the wrong in some way, to do the unjust in some way, because it serves his ends of lording it over people, his ends of satisfaction in various ways. Ezehu Gibor HaKovesh, the one who conquers at Yitzro. And this notion of Moshel, of ruling over something, leads us to perhaps the whole idea of the word mashal being a parable, being poetry as well. Look, you wouldn't be listening to anything, you'd be hearing noise, and I would be making stam noise were we not to have language. But language, as has been famously observed by, I forget the linguists who observe it, the map, language is a map of reality, but the map, language itself, is not reality. A tree is not a tree. Tree is only a word, And all language, all words are as the comic strip Pogo. You have to be a certain age to even know what that comic strip is about. But comic strip Pogo, Pogo said in the comic strip once, words of wisdom from Pogo. Man is by nature a symbol-minded creature. We couldn't have a mind of any meaning if we didn't have ways of expressing it. Sounds express ideas, express realities, and they are nothing but symbols. The tree is not a tree. I might as well say, if there's shared understanding, that this thing that we look at, that we call a tree, could very well be a glove. Glove. Oh, what a beautiful glove, right? But it's a symbol of something, conjures up something. Poetry is the attempt, the parable or the poem is the attempt to push language to the extreme. So the language points beyond simply a tree and points to a certain kind of a quality of a tree, a quality of a tree. So we might speak of a person who is as powerful as a mighty oak. Perhaps he's a village blacksmith under the chestnut or the mighty oak. A powerful man. Sadi katomar yifrach. Righteous are compared to this tree. Ki eres balvanon, to the cedar in the Lebanon. And so on and so forth. Their qualities. So we come on the one hand with the ruling over others, simple, raw, what we call naked power. The power, if you will, of the fist. And on the other hand, we come of the power of language to allow us to express in symbols the way we are perceiving the world. And beyond that language, pushed to the nth degree, gives us poetry, gives us shira. And now we come to where the two meet. Because once we're in poetry, we're in the world of not simply like using language, like we'd say, let's meet by the tree. So there's a way, a map of something we know to get to the tree. But we're using language as a way of pointing to something beyond the mere physical. And that's beginning to take us into poems. Now, I don't dare or try to at this point, in terms of the length of what I have to say, try to go into these two poems, brief poems as they may be. But I do want to point you at this time to an interpretation. Al kein yomru hamish moshlim. Therefore the moshlim said, and the Gemara in Bava Basra, Adaf Ayin Chet Amid Beit, on 78b in Tractate Bava Batra, the Gemara says, who are these Moshlim? And the Gemara says, they are the people who conquer, who rule over their Yetzer, their inclination to do that which satisfies them for the moment, which gives them pleasure, which gives them a sense of power over others. These people are Moshlim. And of course, the Gemara knows, because the Gemara is itself making a poetic interpretation, they are Moshlim Beruchan. They rule over their Ruach. They are the ones who understand the poetry and the ultimate meaning of Shira. Right? Now, what are they saying? They saying, Bowu Cheshbon, come unto Cheshbon. Now, we're saying that we should come to a particular city called Cheshbon. No, it means, if you want to be Moshel Beruchacha, if you want to conquer, you want to rule over your base instincts and make your life spiritual and meaningful, then you have to live a life in come and make an accounting. A reckoning. Lachshov is to think, and the cheshbon is a reckoning that we do through thought. Cheshbon in Hebrew can be mathematics, it can be a receipt of a bill, But to make what we call a cheshbon hanefesh is to make a reckoning of what we are doing, the meaning of what we are doing, the rightness of what we are doing, to regularly assess what I'm doing and what fascinates me and what I'm involved in all the time. And in doing that, we're making a reckoning, a plus minus, a cost benefit analysis, because whatever we do, we gain something and we lose something. That's what's always happening, right? Anybody listening or watching this now, this will also be on my poetry channel, not only on the Chumash Shvi channel. Whatever we do, we're taking time away from, and that time does not come back. So we're spending time. So we're making a cheshbon. How am I going to spend my time? So it's also spending, just like spending money, right? So now spend some time on the Gemara. The Gemara says, Al-Kain Yomru Hamoshlim, Bo Cheshbon, Al-Kain Yomru Hamoshlim, Bo V'Nachshov Cheshbon O'Shalom, Hefsed Mitzvah, the loss of doing Mitzvah. After all, I'm doing Mitzvah, I can't do other things that a lot of people enjoy more. Keneged schara, against the gain of the mitzvah. And the other way around, schara veira, it's really enjoyable. It's a reward, but keneged hefseida, but what is the cost of that? And here I'm quoting from the Mesilat Yesharim in the third chapter when he talks about the quality of zehirut, of being cautious and careful in what we're doing and not what we are doing and not doing the wrong thing. He explains, and I'll translate. The true advice, only those people can give that kind of advice. Only those kind of people who have already left the power of their yetzer, their inclination towards things that are not good and not proper, and mashluvo, and conquered it. A person who is still chained in the bonds of his yetzer, what, of human bondage, his eyes don't see the truth and can't even recognize it if they saw it. Because the yetzer, the inclination to do that which is the pleasure of the moment, the eyes don't see that at all. It's like a person walking in darkness and so on and so forth. And therefore the Mesilat Yesharim goes on beautifully to say, listen to the wise. Listen to the people who have figured it out. And the Torah is giving me this kind of advice. Al-Kain Yomru Hamoslim Bo'u Cheshbon. Come to make the accounting, right? Schar mitzvah keneged hefseida, the hesed of a mitzvah keneged schara, the cost benefit analysis of doing that which is good and right against the cost benefit analysis of doing that which is may not be good, but it's pleasurable. It may be wrong, but we enjoy it. There is a price to pay beyond anything else. It's the price. It's the price of time. And the price of time is the price of life. The passage, the line in Thoreau's Walden, he finds it strange that people can kill time without understanding that they are damaging eternity. We can't, when we waste time, we're wasting life. And when we misuse our time, we are really wasting life and wasting ourselves. And so the Moshlim, the spinners of parables, the poets are seeking to take me through language beyond mere identification of the thinginess of this world and so on and so forth, to the meaning of this world. And the Torah is a safer Shira and safer Mishle as a book of parables and poetry, and Shir Hashirim, which the Rambam tells us is the great mashal, B'chol shir hashir, the Rambam says in Perek Yud, in the 10th chapter of Hilchot Teshuvah, the laws of repentance, which is the last chapter of the Book of Knowledge, the Rambam says the love of God. If you want to understand it, you have to understand the poetic meaning of shir hashirim. B'chol shir hashirim, mashal hu l'inyan hazeh. All of Shir HaShirim is a mashal, a parable, a poem of this issue, and that issue is the issue of the love of God and our life with the other and the love of the other, the love of one man to another, of the lover in Shir HaShirim, the beloved in Shir HaShirim. It's all the mashal. It's the mashal of the love of our fellow man. V'yahavta l'reacha kamocha. Right? V'yahavtem esager. Right? We have to understand love. And the people who will have the words of love are the poets.
That concludes our podcast. If you would like to dedicate or sponsor a podcast, visit our website at eretzpod.org. That's eretzpod.org. If you enjoy our content, leave us a kind rating or review on your podcast platform. It helps others to find us. And thanks for learning with us.